As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not Roger Sine.
I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Welcome to the Tampering Podcast. I am not Sam Amick. I also never thought I would have to say that sentence in my entire life. I'm Andrew Schlecht. With me today, I've got Fred Katz, beat writer for the Wizards at The Athletic.
Hello, Sam.
Got Anthony Slater, Warriors beat writer at The Athletic.
I want some internal, like, Kings news and drama and sourcing about the Kings right. to know that you're really taking Sam's place.
Right, some Buddy Hield specials here. Today, we're going to cover 8 questions on the playoffs. And with us for our first couple questions is Mike Smeltz. He's a podcast producer here at The Athletic. He also hosts the Athletic's Nets podcast, The Glue Guys. Mike, what's up? What's up? And if you were a Dr. Seuss book, you'd be called Sam I'm Not. Sorry. Oh. By the way. Sorry. Wow, thank you. What an introduction. Thanks, Dad. Right. Okay, so our first question is, have we learned anything about the Nets in this first round series? We'll start with Mike. What have you learned as a Nets observer? Well, so the two sort of things, both good and bad, that you've learned about the Nets. And if you had been watching the Nets during the year, and there were rare glimpses of the big three actually playing together on the floor, what you've learned for sure is that they can play together and they can produce, you know, sort of extremely efficient offense, right? And even though at times it can get bogged down into like one-on-one basketball, still those are three of the best one-on-one basketball players in the world. So even if it doesn't, you know, look as beautiful as the team Anthony covers, the Warriors at their peak, it's effective, efficient basketball. I think, though, in it's 3-1, the Celtics-Nets series, there's still got to be concern because you look, you know, defensively, there's just too many stretches where the Nets sort of philosophy seems to be, I hope they miss, right? Like it's not pressure. They don't put pressure on shooters. They don't make the guy with the ball have to make sort of a rush decision. The other team feels comfortable when they're playing on offense against the Nets.
And the Celtics had scoring problems in the series. And then they've also had moments where, you know, the Celtics scored plenty of points in game four. They just didn't stop the Nets. And obviously that can be the Nets thing the whole year. But the defense question, which has been with them the whole year, continues. It just, you know, they can be good on defense. But if they're going to continue to switch everything and Kyrie's going to be the guy that's going to get picked on, Kyrie can only be so good on defense, even if he wants to be. So I think that's a huge, it's like, we're still learning about the team. They're still forming, right? But offense, fantastic, and defense, bad. That's basically what we've learned.
I've learned that their main guys are healthy through four games, which can't be said about the other team that we had questions about coming into the playoffs, the Lakers, right? You're already seeing it with Davis. The fact that Durant has played four pretty high-minute games and looks like himself physically is important. Obviously, Kyrie Harden coming back from the hammy, you never know how quickly a hamstring type thing is going to pop up. It hasn't popped up. That's important. I do think the Jeff Green injury, and this says a lot about the Nets, you know, maybe supporting cast, that hurts, right? I mean, if Jeff Green is limited or can't play in the Milwaukee series, like that is, you know, a guy to throw at Giannis. Maybe physically their best guy to throw at Giannis. And he's hurt, although DiVincenzo on the other side is not going to play. And then other than that, Blake Griffin can still dunk. We've learned that. Although I don't know where you guys are at on Blake. I don't think he's necessarily had that good of a series, but he has had a couple, you know, dunks that made you feel a little bit vintage for him.
He's gotten picked on defensively. He's a problem for them defensively. To me, I think that's almost where the Jeff Green injury shows the most, where they play those lineups with Green at the five, and those lineups can be really successful. Where Green started playing five like 3 years ago. And those lineups can be really successful when they play him there. To me, the thing that I went into the playoffs wanting to know about them, we knew they were going to be awesome. We knew those guys were going to figure out some way to make it work and work at an elite level offensively. But what I kind of wanted to know, especially with the defensive issues that Smeltz mentioned, is how much could they make it work offensively? Like, would they be elite or would they be historically elite offensively? And in 81 playoff minutes, when they have Harden, Durant, Kyrie, and Joe Harris on the floor, they are scoring against Boston 141 points per 100 possessions.
Feels light, actually.
For perspective, like, I didn't know that a number that high existed. Like, I didn't know that you could do that. It's completely outrageous. During the regular season, those four guys, when they played together, were 125, but they only played seven games together. So we really didn't have a huge sample on it. We still don't. Boston's defense was you know, had troubles during the regular season when they were at full strength, let alone without Jaylen Brown. And, you know, it's not like they're doing this against a tremendous defense. I don't think we have the answer, but... But for perspective, I mean, I think the team that this offense gets compared to all the time is the one that Slater covered, which was just the KD Warriors, which was a bunch of incredible offensive players with wonderful and diverse skill sets coming together to make this perfect scoring machine, right? And that was Curry, that was Draymond, that was Klay, and that was KD. In a single season, over the 3 years those guys played together, those four guys, when they were on the floor together, their best single season offensive rating when the four of them were together was 122 points per 100, which is outrageous. I mean, that's an unbelievable number. That would be by far the best offense of all time if that number belonged to a single team. But it puts in perspective how much that lineup has been absolutely annihilating Boston with the 141 in 81 playoff minutes. So
this is the steroid era for offensive numbers, though.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
But compared to the steroid era, if this is the steroid era, then a 141 offensive rating is 2004 Barry Bonds, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah,
Barry Bonds. Playing with Canseco and Maguire, you know, when they were the best. So that's the thing. Like, people, you will see the complaints that the offense doesn't have flow at times. And I'm sort of like, well, how much flow do you really need? You know, because if the ball's in Harden's hands, and Harden has been really good about not being too much of Houston Harden. Now, he is that when he's the lead dog on the bench units. When Nash goes to Harden as the solo star on the floor in the second quarter, it's a little too much Houston Rockets. Everyone else stand around and Harden dribbles the ball between his legs, right? But when they're together, all three of them understand that they try to get off their shot, and if it's not there from them, they'll just pass it to Kevin Durant, who ends up being open. There was an amazing moment in the Boston game last night where the ball, it was as the big three plus Joe Harris, and the ball was moving around the three-point line. Boston is running at each of the stars as they pass the ball along. Durant gets the pass. He's open from three and passes it up to Joe Harris, who's open in the corner for three. And it's like, you know, Slater, you've probably seen this when Durant was playing with Curry and Thompson, but a guy like Kevin Durant giving up the ball from three, an open three, to give it to another player who happens to be Joe Harris, it also shows you, like, we don't talk about Joe Harris, right? But he's shooting 50% from three. And if he's shooting...
He's basically their Clay, essentially.
Right. And he doesn't move. You know, he doesn't need to move.
Defensively. You know? Yeah. Yeah, there's the legendary screenshot from one of the Warriors games where it's like Curry driving in the lane and it's Durant wide open on the wing and Klay Thompson wide open in the corner and they're pointing at each other. Like, you know, Steph, pass it to that guy. Steph, pass it to that guy. That's essentially, you know, kind of what it is, I guess, the East Coast version. But, I mean, we obviously don't have answers on Brooklyn, which were mentioned in seven regular season games. A really depleted, kind of bad Celtics team right now that they're about to dispose of. We're going to learn a whole lot in the next couple weeks. And that's, you know, as we look ahead, I mean, that's going to be, you know, this second round series coming up, Nets, Bucks, kind of reminds me of when Warriors, Rockets, when it was like, you know, they were kind of clashing. Like, that is a heavyweight, like, finals level potential battle in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, that Milwaukee defense is engineered to guard a team like the Nets. Because, I mean, the way that Giannis defended, Giannis was incredible. I just called him, I did say Giannis. I think I coughed as I was saying Giannis. I just want to be clear. I did not say Giannis. No, he was incredible guarding Jimmy Butler in that series. Just amazing. And now he's probably going to end up matching up against Kevin Durant in that second round series, assuming Brooklyn pulls this out, which I'm sure they will. You got Holiday, who is an absolutely spectacular one-on-one defender and is incredible navigating screens and would be is basically an ideal Kyrie Irving defender. And you can get Middleton on Harden. I'm going to be super interested as well. We talked about the Nets small ball lineups they like to use. Even, like, I'm considering Griffin at the five, a small ball lineup too. Brook Lopez has basically disposed of three-pointers the last 3 weeks. He's just gone down low and just pounded it. It's like we're getting his career trajectory is so fascinating, where he was all post and then all threes. Now apparently he's
Fred
basically
loves the Lopez brothers.
I'm fascinated by the Lopez brothers.
Nothing that fascinates Fred more than the Lopez brothers.
That is true. They both had such weird career trajectories, and it's just this crazy winding stories of them kind of weaving between different identities every season. It's very strange. But
Fred actually went to Palo Alto to do some like studying and research on early days Lopez.
I should have, man. If the world were normal, you know, there's a 100% chance I would have done that story this year. Yeah. I would have been in Palo Alto for like 3 weeks. I would have been like 5% invested in some sort of tech company by the time I left. That's how long I would have been there for. But Lopez is pounding down low. It's going to be really interesting to see what he does against the Nets small ball lineups and how Milwaukee plays that. I know it's a little premature to get into a Milwaukee-Brooklyn preview, but that next series it's a much bigger test for Brooklyn and could be, I mean, that's the series of the second round.
Yeah. Let's move on to our next question. And it's about two teams in two different conferences, so this isn't necessarily about a matchup, but it's more about two teams that have young elite point guards. So give me your take. Do you think the Hawks or the Grizzlies have a brighter future ahead of them?
I think the Hawks, because they're in the Eastern Conference. You know, as I think about the West next season, the season beyond, like, you're still, like, you know, trying to figure out Memphis fitting in that eight, although, you know, it was 10 this year. They were actually ninth, right? Finished the season ninth, played their way in. And as you know, look forward to next season, there's not necessarily teams above them where you're like, Memphis is on the way to hopping them. Now, Ja Morant has exploded. You've raised the ceiling of him just like you have with Trae Young out East. I actually, you know, Jaren Jackson hasn't had a good season. Obviously, coming off the meniscus tear, really that he was absent a lot longer than expected. He didn't come back till late in the season. He's been a little bit rusty. There's been times where they've played, you know, Xavier Tillman over him down the stretch of games, and they're trying to kind of fit him back in. So to me, Jaren Jackson's future makes me a little bit more like questioning Memphis and particularly their place in a crowded West. Whereas with the Hawks, as you look forward, I think they've surrounded Trae Young with like kind of the correct talent, and they're in the East, right? I mean, they're in the 4-5 matchup, and even if they are the same level as Memphis, that just makes you like the fourth or fifth seed in the East, where it just doesn't in the West.
I think I agree. I think I'll say Hawks. I think the Grizzlies have the higher ceiling, but the Hawks are the safer pick. Just because I think Ja has a chance to be the best player out of either of those teams. He's truly spectacular. And if he adds some semblance of a jump shot, it's not like his jump shot is horribly broken or he's horribly away from it.
It killed the Warriors season because they went into that play-in, you know, do-or-die game going, we're giving Ja Morant the three-pointer. And now he hit a career-high 5 in the game, which is crazy that his career-high is only 5. But he hit 5 in that game, and like that, you know, that was the biggest moment of his career to that point, and he hit 5.
Yeah.
Morant is obviously so young, but Fred, you watch John Wall for a lot of years. Where do you tier the Ja shot in terms of like speedy athletic point guards in the bucket of like young Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, John Wall? Like there's this archetype of this ultra athletic point guard who doesn't have a really good shot. Ja's shot to me feels stronger than Westbrook's, obviously, and even better than Wall's. I mean, Wall got better from mid-range at some point, but I don't know. I think there's more potential there. Like I think there's a place where like he could be at 35% from 3 eventually, and it feels like kind of comfortable.
Yeah, I think Ja's farther along. I think the big difference is like the guys you mentioned. Westbrook had man, maybe I should be covering Ja because apparently I cover every athletic point guard who doesn't shoot jumpers. Right. Westbrook always had the problem with his legs. His legs dangled, and that brought him off balance, and that hurt his shot. He also basically shot a line drive. And Wall, fundamentally, the worry with Wall, which he still hasn't quite fixed, is that his 3-point shot is different fundamentally than his mid-range shot. He basically shoots more of a set shot from 3-point range, and I think that's something that he always tried to iron out, and he could never quite get comfortable and could never quite do it. And when you have two different shots with, you know, depending on your distance, you shoot the ball differently. That's usually a bad sign. You're not going to necessarily work it out. And Wall hasn't really done it. He's had seasons where he's been okay, but he's inconsistent from year to year. I would say that I think Ja is more consistent fundamentally and farther along fundamentally as a shooter and looks more comfortable. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he all of a sudden came in a year or two or three and was hitting a respectable amount of threes at a decent volume. I mean, we could ask the same questions about De'Aaron Fox. I kind of feel the same way about Fox, even though he's older than Ja. And I think Ja probably has more potential. I think he's more of a passer and is more explosive, while Fox is more of just kind of a speedier, quicker guy. But I think Ja, I just feel like Ja is going to work it out. He's, man, what a talent. But that said, I'm going the Hawks, I guess, because the East is so much easier to climb up. I mean, they're already on the verge of winning a playoff series. They're up 3-1. I mean, they're on the verge of winning a playoff series already with this core, and presumably Trae is going to get better and more manipulative as a point guard, and they got to figure out the John Collins situation because he's restricted after this year, but they've got Capella for a few more years, and he's tremendously important for them, and they didn't have a lot of guys this year. They had a lot of injuries, and DeAndre Hunter was looking like a most improved candidate before he got hurt. Bogdanovich is a great fit for them. Gallinari can still play. I could see them being better next year than they were this year, as long as they're able to just stay healthy. They didn't even have Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Hawks, it's like they made all the big moves. Trey is better right now. Trey's a more dynamic offensive force right now. He has a better supporting cast right now. And the Hawks, I mean, Hawks fans have talked about this for decades probably, is that like at some point the hope is Atlanta becomes a destination for free agents. It has really never been in terms of superstar free agents, but it has the potential where, you know, Memphis doesn't really have that level, and Memphis has been way more successful over the past decade than the Hawks have been. But in terms of getting that next star next to Trae Young or next to Ja, you would definitely put Atlanta over Memphis. The thing that Memphis, like the only way I could see Memphis sort of breaking through in this race between these two teams that we're laying out is if they have that weird season where, like, let's say Ja gets hurt and they're in the lottery and they get a lucky lottery ball bounce and they end up getting a stud prospect. And then, you know, then it becomes Jaren Jackson, Ja, and it's probably another J name. Whoever, another J prospect would come along in the three J's, the flying J's, if you will, and they're off and running. But like,
it's supposed to be Jackson, though, right? That's supposed to be Jackson. To be. And it just hasn't been.
The idea of him is better than what he has been, and there's been injuries, and he's young, but he hasn't been that. You know, he hasn't been that production. And the front office has shown that they're really good at drafting players. They're really good at it. In the middle of the first round, they are great at grabbing guys. So, you know, maybe they don't have to be high up in the lottery. Maybe they can find, you know, of course, the draft is littered with guys who are way better than their draft slot ended up being. But, yeah, it's Atlanta's just so tantalizing. The only issue, they had a coaching change this season. Travis Schlenk was quote unquote like on the hot seat ish from what we understand. So is organizationally, are they as stable as maybe what's happening in Memphis? I don't know that, but Atlanta has definitely, there's been some heat in Atlanta. We've already seen a coaching change. So maybe things could happen there. Like structurally, that just changes things differently.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you guys about Atlanta having just a higher ceiling overall, just because they are in the Eastern Conference. And if you put Memphis in the East, I think they could be doing similar stuff over there against a team like the Knicks, who are a team that seems like they're about done. And
great segue.
And our guy Mike Smeltz here is the mastermind behind this podcast called Shattered. I don't know, you guys, I'm sure you guys have heard of it. I'm sure most of you have listened to it. If you haven't, you need to go check it out. Smeltz, tell us a little bit about Shattered and kind of the journey that we've been through with that podcast.
Yeah, so Shattered is a documentary style podcast. It's about the past 20 years of the Knicks. And usually when I say that, anyone who knows basketball is like, yeesh, don't do that. Don't talk about those years, because those are the Dolan years. So basically what we tried to do is track all of James Dolan's ownership of the Knicks from the end of the 90s Knicks. The 90s Knicks were always in contention. They were Jordan's foil earlier in his career, and then they would have classic battles against Pat Riley's Heat and Reggie Miller's Pacers in the back half of that decade. The Knicks in 1999 go to the NBA Finals as the eighth seed, and that is actually the first year that James Dolan is really inserted in as the head of the Knicks organization. And so each episode is like the eras, the Isaiah Thomas era, the Phil Jackson era. My favorite episode of them all is about the decision and the Knicks' pursuit of LeBron. And if you're a Sopranos TV show fan, there's a great bit of Sopranos history involved because they were part of the pitch to try to get LeBron. It was, in fact, the last time that the two main characters from the TV show were together on screen in their characters. It was for LeBron. That's how powerful he is. And then we go through and what's interesting about the Knicks is that they haven't been horrible the whole time. They've been good. They've had moments where they get Jeremy Lin, right? And that was a month. That was great. Kristaps Porzingis, what a fantastic draft pick. We talked to the front office executive in Phil Jackson's front office, who was the one who scouted Kristaps and who pushed for the pick and all that stuff. But then the team just makes a left turn. And why do they make that left turn? Who's at the wheel? We try to talk about that. So we just wrapped up the series, 8 episodes this past Tuesday. From people who are listening to this, it was a week ago. So, and that last episode has some fun nuggets about how things are being run at the Garden. So there's a lot in there. It's super enjoyable. If you're a Knicks fan, Chuck D from Public Enemy is the narrator. What a bad pitch. I didn't put Chuck D first. Chuck D should be first. Why am I saying anything? I should just say Chuck D, the Knicks. Chuck D is a delight to work with. More professional than me, obviously. It's fun. It's just a fun bass. It's how to not succeed in business, right? That's what this really is. So it's super enjoyable. Yeah. And now the Knicks are good.
It's a great podcast.
You're welcome, Knicks fans.
Right.
we happen to pick the 1 year that the Knicks are good to release a thing to talk about why they haven't been good. But the Knicks are, you know, on a precarious place in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah. You wonder why Julius Randle had such a great year. It's because you were working so hard on this podcast all season, Mike.
He's been a shatter. Now that the podcast is concluded, Julius Randle's falling off in the playoffs.
Exactly. Seems right to me. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And right after this break, we are going to talk about the Lakers and Suns.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, we're back from that quick break, and we're going to talk Lakers-Suns. And my question is, which injury will matter more in this first round series? Is it Anthony Davis or Chris Paul?
This is really tough. I've already changed my mind 14 times since you actually asked it.
Yeah.
So Davis is the better player. So obviously, I'm inclined to lean Anthony Davis, and he missed the second half of game four, and Chris Paul played pretty well in game four. But I think I'm going to lean Chris Paul, because I assuming he's hurt and is unable to play. You know, if he's putting up 18-9 every game, it's different. And if Davis is literally out compared to that, it's obviously different. But assuming they're the same state of injured, I think the answer is Chris Paul. And as you can tell, I'm extremely certain about that. And if you disagree with me, you're horribly wrong.
I'm about to disagree with
you. I was going to say, I think Slater's going to disagree with me because he said that Chris Paul is not the best player on the Suns last week. And I don't agree with that. I think Chris Paul is the most important player on the Suns. And Davis is not the most important player on the Lakers. I mean, if you dig into it, the Lakers were still, when LeBron is on the floor and Anthony Davis is not, the Lakers are +8 per 100 possessions this year.
Did you watch that game yesterday?
Yeah.
After he went out?
Yes. It was quite ugly. But Chris Paul played well.
Chris Paul played pretty well.
When Chris Paul's not there, the Suns are not the same team. Even when Booker and Ayton are there, the Suns are basically an average team without Chris Paul.
Yeah, but let's say you have full throttle Chris Paul and you just took Devin Booker out of this series. I mean, Suns are getting killed too. So I personally still think Devin Booker is the best player on Phoenix, but that is another conversation. I think the Davis injury matters more because it's the right now injury. You know, he might not play in game five. And even if he does, that's a groin strain that happened as of us talking, 20 hours ago.
Yep.
Chris Paul's shoulder is trending in the correct direction. You know, and it was a stinger, but generally, it doesn't seem like a thing that he's necessarily going to re-injure unless maybe his neck gets kind of twisted in a similar type way. But you know, they're going back to Phoenix. Two out of the final three are in Phoenix. Chris Paul progressed. Like, I actually thought Chris Paul was better in game three than he was in game two. Game two, he couldn't even like dribble with his right hand, couldn't pass at all. Game three, his numbers were not good, but that was kind of just a boat race by the Lakers anyways that I think was happening regardless. The way this series has kind of twisted and turned now to this point, Chris Paul is rising. The Suns are going back to Phoenix. And Anthony Davis, like, that did not look like a good injury. And it's been Achilles this season. He twisted his knee. He was actually questionable for the game with a knee injury. And then now he's got the groin strain. He just looks really, really beat up. He just kind of has all season. And they are not a good offensive team, particularly when he's not on the floor. I mean, that right now I'm looking, they're shooting 29% from three in this series. And that's only better than the Wizards in this postseason. As Fred, I'm sure, has watched the Wizards just stroke threes.
It's been something.
Yeah. I just, like, if Davis isn't right, particularly if Davis doesn't play, I'm very worried about the Lakers. And yeah, and that changes the title dynamic, really.
Yeah, you're right. Without a doubt. You're right. I changed my mind. You're right. Yeah. It is.
Well,
Davis.
I just worry about the Lakers. I don't know who they count on from here, because it was always LeBron AD and they were going to carry them. And then you didn't need as much. But well, Dennis Schroeder hasn't looked right. Kyle Kuzma hasn't been very good in this series. They can't even play Montrezl Harrell. I mean, essentially, they're relying on a guy like Wes Matthews. Like, Alex Caruso has to be a big part of what they're doing. They just have no scoring punch, especially if Kyle Kuzma can't get in there and get buckets. I mean, who is it?
They are three best players in the playoffs last season. We're obviously LeBron, Davis, who was unbelievable, and then KCP was their third best player in the playoffs. He didn't even play yesterday. He's also injured right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, like, I guess Gasol should probably rise to a bigger role. I think him and LeBron kind of have a nice little combination. He threw him a nice alley-oop kind of yesterday. But the other thing is, did LeBron look like full LeBron to you guys? He doesn't to me. I mean, I know he's still kind of powering and willing the Lakers in this situation, but he doesn't look like, you know, prime LeBron or even last season.
No, he doesn't. He's not playing the same way that he did during the run last year. And the other thing is that they shot the hell out of the ball in the bubble last year. I mean, compared to what you normally expect from those kinds of players, like, you talk about KCP was their third best player on that run, and I agree with you. He was making everything on that run, as were basically everybody else. Anthony Davis was shooting the hell out of the ball away from the basket. I mean, everybody was shooting incredibly well compared to their season averages on that run. And, you know, that makes a big impact when you're going for a title. So yeah, I mean, this is why I'm on the fence. I told you I changed my mind 14 times. I'm changing it for a 15th. You're right. You're right. It's Anthony Davis. I was thinking make it up and say they're equally injured, but, you know, based on the actual reality of things, you're right.
The one thing I would say about Davis, right, he has a history of you know, he gets injured, comes back, gets injured, comes back. I mean, there's a chance, look, he shows up in game five, is great. They win in Phoenix. And then if we had a podcast the day after, we'd be talking like, here the Lakers come again. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And one of the big questions I had going into the series is about DeAndre Ayton and how aggressive he was going to be and how he'd play against some of these Lakers bigs. And he's been easily the best big guy in the series. And to me, that's a really big deal moving forward.
He's been great. These teams. He's been killer. He's been so good around the rim for them, and he's finishing everything. Amick's not here, so I have a kind of diverging question that I just want to throw us off topic. Is that okay? Can I throw this out?
It's taken this long for Fred to take the reins. Yeah.
I wait till Sam's gone. And then I have,
which of the Lopez brothers has impressed us more?
Right. Are we ready for a Robin Lopez return to Phoenix?
So how much money do you think Garrison Matthews is going to get in restricted free agency this year, guys? No. Okay. It actually is a free agency question. So everybody talks about Chris Paul as if he's on this huge deal and he's locked up for a bit and he's got the $44 million player option that everybody just assumes he's going to pick up because it's $44 million. If you're Chris Paul, don't you decline that player option this summer and become a free agent? Like, the Suns have his bird rights and they can't lose him. Like, they just traded for him. They jumped up to the number two seed. He had as great of a year as you could have possibly wanted. Are you really going to piss off Devin Booker by letting him walk? They have to pay him. And I know there are complications with the over 38 rule, but if you go 3 years, $100+ million for Chris Paul, like you have to go into that territory if you're Phoenix, as opposed to just risking letting him walk. And then you're in serious trouble because now you just took a massive step back after you took a massive leap forward. You're no longer in the contender conversation. And I don't really know how you get back there. There might be ways to sneak into it, but no ways that are any easier than just re-signing Chris Paul. So I don't know. Would you guys opt out if you were Chris Paul, or would you take that $44 million player option?
I mean, I would talk behind the scenes and try to work out something that is franchise and player friendly, which I think what you're talking about can help the Suns in a sense of, yeah, yes, Chris Paul would have like some form of leverage, but also, you know, if Chris Paul's salary next season went from 44 down to 30, down to 28, but it's, you know, 28 plus, you know, rising over the next three seasons, that helps Phoenix at least next season shave a bunch of money off payroll. So I think, yeah, I think it's probably wise for both sides to figure something out that's a little bit more longer term. But, you know, what Mike was mentioning earlier with Atlanta being a destination, if they become a good team, just because of what it is as a city, Phoenix is too. You know, NBA players like spending their winters in Phoenix. And I could see them, if, you know, this Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton pairing is what it looks like it's becoming. I could see that being a place where a third guy, a younger third guy than Chris Paul in the future, does want to go there and play with those two.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he'll opt out. I think it's the smart business decision because there's no guarantees how long he'll be at this level. And you're going to be paying for him at this level for, you know, 3 years beyond now. And that just makes sense.
He's such a business guy, though. He would only opt out if he literally has his next deal set, right? Yeah, I mean, he's not going to opt out and be like, let me take some free agent meetings and see what my value is.
Well, it would be the first time in NBA history that a player approached free agency that way, negotiating a deal before he actually was up. Right. It's never happened.
I just mean, if he opts in, that'll tell you that, like, he knew, like, no, that's not, like, as great as I look this season, I'm not getting what I want.
I think he will get what he wants, though. Like, I think he has all the leverage in that situation. Like, if you're Devin Booker and you're already on your max deal, and you love playing with Chris Paul, and you're finally winning at a ridiculous level, a level that's almost top of the league, you're going to be pissed if they just let Chris Paul walk purely because they don't want to pay him after he just had a tremendous year. That Chris Paul contract, by the way, is such an incredible lesson in perspective, where everybody talks about contracts as if they're just in a vacuum, but no team that has traded for Chris Paul has regretted it.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, it was great for OKC. It was great for just that 1 year blip for Oklahoma City to get back into the playoffs. A lot of people didn't even think they'd make the playoffs. And then
it's good for Houston too.
Yeah, it was great originally for Houston. Yeah, outstanding for Houston.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Okay, let's go to our next question, question number four. The Clippers have flipped the momentum on the Mavs. Do we trust them to keep it?
Yes, my title pick has awoken. Yeah, I mean, we thought going into the series they were the better team. They were the favorite team. Yeah. Obviously, like, what happened in those two LA games was, like, jaw-dropping. But it's almost equally or more impressive to go down 2-0, have to go on the road, go down, what were they down, 30-11 in game three? I mean, there was a moment it was like, are they about to get swept like easily? And then now, I think all three of us, we'll see what you two say, but I would guess all three of us would pick the Clippers to win this series, just with two back in LA, although that home court obviously hasn't, you know, shown itself in the series. But what do we trust them? I think that's kind of like the part of your question. I'm like, I don't know that any of us trust the Clippers to do anything at this point, but I would pick them in the series for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I'll pick them in the series. They were my title pick coming in, or they were my West pick coming into the playoffs. You know what's amazing about all this? That after game two, and Andrew, you and I were even joking about it on one of our text threads about how after game two, Ty Lue said, you know what? The pressure wasn't on us. We were at home. It's easy to win the first two games at the road. Now they got to go back. They got to defend home court up 2-0. That's pressure. And we were all like, oh my God, what a way to flip this thing, right? And then he was right. That is the remarkable thing I take from this. Yes, I wouldn't say I trust the Clippers, but I think the Clippers are going to win this series. And I feel pretty confident in that. They seem to have figured out a formula. You know, Dallas in those first two games was just hitting every shot. They were shooting, I don't want to say it's an unsustainable number because you can get hot for a playoff series, but they were shooting outrageous percentages. You know, we talk about injuries. Luka looked like he was grimacing through that neck injury the whole game last night. You could see him kind of twitching and making faces, and he did not look like the normal dominant Luka. And Kawhi, man, he is just attacking every time. Like, he is just at the rim every play. He's been so insanely efficient. Even in the games they lost, he's been so insanely efficient in this series and so effective getting to the rim. And based on the Mavs defense, I mean, I get, you know, they played Boban against the Clippers small lineup yesterday as an adjustment. But against that defense, I don't see a way where if Kawhi decides I'm going to get to the rim every time, I don't really see a way where Dallas is going to stop him from doing that. I think he can continue to play like this.
He's on the hunt right now. That's like, I've seen this Kawhi before, right? We've seen it, you know, originally against the Heat back in the day, but I remember that Raptors Warriors series as the Warriors were getting injured and kind of falling apart a little bit physically. Kawhi just got this kind of like, it's just that like robot, like assassin mentality that he, and, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking right now. Dallas is still tops in the playoffs in 3-point percentage. They're at 43%. And that's with going 5 of 30 in game four from three, which I think they were above 50% after three games. And, yeah, I mean, that is unsustainable. They could get, you know, they're still a good, you know, floor spacing team, 3-point shooting team. They could get hot and, you know, suddenly they win game five and it's different. Like, this is still the series, I think, to watch the rest of the first round. But I don't know, Andrew, where are you at?
I lean toward the Clippers just being able to finish it. It's the two things that Fred mentioned. Certainly the injury to Luka is the big deal, and he downplayed it, but then Carlisle said like no, like he couldn't look to his left, like he couldn't have his head on a swivel like he always does, which is like one of the big things about Luka's game, and to me that's a huge problem. And then like you said, getting to the rim. I mean, once the Clippers realized they could get to the rim whenever they wanted to, I feel like the series just changed. And so I don't think that either one of those things will change. I think it's going to be hard for Luka to get fully healthy, which is what they need. I mean, they needed him to lead the playoffs in scoring in order to get there. You know, he was averaging 38 points per game before this game where he scored 19. He's 9 of 24. I mean, they need Luka to be the best player in this series. And I think it was clearly Kawhi yesterday. And if Kawhi's the best player in the series going forward, I just don't see a path forward for the Mavericks.
This is where the Porzingis never, you know, blossoming into that like 3-point shooting rim protector that we all thought he was going to eventually be, particularly early in the New York days. Like if Porzingis had become who the Mavs obviously were hoping he was when they traded for him, like he would be, you know, kind of thwarting some of this stuff at the rim, but he's just not that. And like, you know, that's, to me, that's wider scope problem for the Mavs to look at, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Next question. What's next for the Heat? The Heat just get obliterated. Jimmy Butler was very, very bad in that first round series against the Bucks. A complete flip from what we saw in the bubble last season. So where do the Heat go from here? Obviously, they have lots of players that can still develop and get better. They've got to pay Duncan Robinson this summer, who will probably demand a pretty large contract. But what's next for the Miami Heat, Fred?
So they have a lot of cap space. Duncan Robinson presumably will take up a good chunk of that. I mean, he's going to look at the Joe Harris and the Davis Bertans deals from last offseason, and he is going to say, that's where we're starting, because that's what elite three-point shooters in my role get. And those guys got around $80 million total. So they're going to have to pay him if they want to keep him. And they can say, go test the market, because he's restricted. But I think that's where they start. But they've got other guys. Dragic could be up. I think they have a team option on him. Nunn is restricted as well. They always seem to want to build through free agency, and they kept so much cap room for this summer for Giannis, and that's not really the case. You know, maybe they go after a Kyle Lowry or something like that, who they were reportedly in on at the trade deadline. To me, they feel like waited out another year and then go crazy in 2022 free agency team. There are so many good free agents in 22. And so it almost feels like a holdover, tweak some of the mistakes, maybe bring in, you know, they were missing an extra defensive three-point shooter, that Crowder type that they had last year, who was so helpful for them down the run. Maybe bring in somebody short-term like that, use your space to bring back Robinson, bring back Nunn, and then you could potentially go in on 2022 and still have that cap room. When there are just so many good free agents, that's when you make your run for, you know, Beal, or, you know, Kyrie could be a free agent then. Durant could be a free agent then. Harden could be a free agent then. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen in those situations. And there are more guys as well. Aaron Gordon is up then. Julius Randle is going to be up then. So that to me, it feels like a very Heat way to play the process. But I'm not totally sure, because they were an imperfect team this year. I mean, Slater, what do you say?
Well, I got to interrupt real quick. Our Sham Sharania just reported that Anthony Davis is unlikely to play in game 5. So we answered the question correctly. It's the Anthony Davis injury.
Me and you did, Andrew. You're right. Me and you answered the question correctly.
No, once the votes were due, I had seen the light. I came over.
So what's the Lakers play here? What do they do here without AD?
Powerball with LeBron. I think Marc Gasol deserves a bigger role. I could theoretically see, we're sitting here Tuesday night, and like LeBron just had one of those just like kind of gritty control everything games. Like Gasol hit a few threes to space the floor and played like this solid veteran style. A couple of the random, you know, Caruso has a decent night. Kuzma will probably, like, to me, he needs a big game. He has that scoring potency in his past. Like, he could have a 22-point night. He is kind of Davis very light, in a sense of, you know, he's kind of like a rangy forward. So, like, you know, they can game plan going in. You know, it sounds like behind the scenes they kind of know he's probably not playing. So I am not counting a LeBron team out. But, yeah, this makes it very difficult. To me, they got to win like a 95-89 game. Which they could, because that's kind of what the series has been.
Yeah, they're going to have to step up defensively, majorly. Like, Caruso and Schroeder are going to have to be awesome against those Phoenix guards. I mean, that's going to be really, really important. And those guys are both really feisty defenders. Yeah, they're going to have to be tremendous defensively. And yeah, I guess LeBron controls things. I think you need Schroeder to step up and have some semblance of a big game. I mean, somebody has to have a big game to make up for Davis. Phoenix is too good, you know? somebody, whether it's Schroeder, whether it's, you know, Talen Horton Tucker, somebody.
Kuzma.
Kuzma's a good one.
This should be Kuzma's moment in the series.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's bounce to our next question. And I don't even know what the question should be for this particular series, but I'm just going to throw it to you, Slater. Who you got, Nuggets or Blazers?
Nuggets, because they have two home games, I guess. I don't know. This is a weird series. I'll take Denver. I don't like either of these teams moving forward, though. You know, yeah. Really, you know, into the next round. This is kind of, it feels a little Knicks Hawks like. Not that, you know, obviously the Hawks have taken control of that series, but like Knicks Hawks are having this great battle with like these great arenas, and everyone's kind of locked into it. But it's like, you know, your guys are just walking to death against Philadelphia, probably. I kind of get that sense with Denver, Portland. Although the West is, I mean, with this Davis situation and everything. I don't know. But who do you guys think?
Yeah, tentatively, Denver. Jokic was so bad in that last game. And
he's had a bad defensive series.
Yeah, yeah. And just seeing a game with him having one assist and just unable to facilitate in the Jokic-y way we know. I just feel like we're not going to see that from him. He's historically been so good in the playoffs for them, and he's so important for them. I know they're missing guys. You know, people talk about Jamal Murray all the time, but Barton is really important for them too. I still think Denver wins just because I have no faith in Portland's defense at all. And I feel like an MVP caliber player, which I think Jokic is because I voted for him for MVP, an MVP caliber player will figure out that defense for 2 out of 3 games at home. But he might not. So, or I should say Denver might not. I'm not extremely confident in that pick. It's such a weird series because it's 2-2 and all the games have been bad. And normally in a 2-2 series, there's some contentiousness. There are moments. I haven't really been great moments.
Fred wasn't hyped about the Austin Rivers game. Oh, there was an Austin Rivers game.
Yeah, Austin Rivers having 16 in the fourth was. That's a moment. That's a moment. Doc then saying the next day that role players need to step up. I saw a role player in Denver step up last night. Was
and I'm gonna give him a moment. 3 years. $45 million this year.
Right. He'd look really good in a Sixers uniform, right? I don't know what I think about this series either. Some of it has to do with Nurkic's foul trouble moving forward, right? Because he's been really good for the Blazers. And I have to think that the Blazers have another gear because you have this game where Damian Lillard makes one shot and the Blazers still win. And Dame shows up year after year in the playoffs. So to me, I kind of favor the Blazers just because of that. And hasn't been a great series just because of the games. And I also think it's not a great series because we know who moves on to the next round is not likely to continue to move on. And so there's just kind of a lack of interest there for me overall.
Wow.
Yeah, I feel
inspiring that. Segment of the podcast.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's Watch Portland, like, I don't Denver, know what the question guys. Is.
You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Portland-Denver series. I think it was second round a couple seasons ago it was, you know, there hasn't been – what Fred's right is in that game – remember that game where Jokic played like 62-something minutes? It was like triple overtime, I think. And then it got to Game 7. Game 7 was in Denver, and Lillard kind of help Portland pull that out. And we could be heading to something similar to that. I mean, to be honest, maybe we should trust Portland more because Lillard is kind of the more trusting playoff player. He's proven it. He dragged them to the West Finals that season. So, you know, at the same time, they then got swept in the West Finals. That's kind of why this series feels similar.
Yeah. I mean, look, the state of this series, going back to Austin Rivers, the state of this series
there we go.
Is –
rides on Austin Rivers, right?
Is that game three, Austin Rivers has made whatever it was, 3 threes in a row. And you had an Austin Rivers legit 28-foot heat check hit back rim with less than a minute remaining in a really close game. And that's where we're at with this series. It's a very different state with these two teams and the way they're playing against each other. Michael Porter Jr. is incredibly important for what it's worth. I mean, he has not really dominated this series at all. And he was so good down the stretch of the season for Denver. If he gets hot, his jumper hits another level. That's something that could put Denver over the top too. And I think that's a weapon that Portland can't really match if he and Jokic are both going.
Yeah. Well, and it's just a shame that they're missing Jamal Murray. And even like PJ Dozier is strangely important to
There's an Oklahoma team. City reference right there.
Yeah, for right.
PJ Dozier.
My number 35, PJ Dozier.
My bigger concern with the Murray situation is like, when is he going to show up next season? You know, I mean, like he's going to miss a large chunk of next season. And you know, that injury, just because of the timing of it, might have set Denver back two seasons, which... You know, again, we're ending on somber notes here, but
right. Let's go to another somber note. The NBA is kind of having a problem with some wild fan behavior. We've had the Westbrook popcorn incident, the Trae Young spit incident, and then we have the Kyrie Irving getting a water bottle thrown at him in Boston yesterday. And we're kind of in this place where everybody's has their take on what the NBA should do and if they're doing enough, but. Where are you guys at on how the NBA is acting on all of this?
I think they're kind of doing as much as they can. I mean, I don't think this is an NBA problem. I think it's a people are jerks problem. And I think it probably extends to that only. I mean, the NBA has acted swiftly. They banned fans. The guy in Shams reported last night that the guy in Boston who threw the water bottle was arrested. I don't know what more you can do other than literally moving fans away from the court, which they're not going to do because then they can't charge for courtside seats. So I don't know realistically what the NBA would do in a scenario like this beyond what they've already done, which is not to say that, you know, this crap isn't ridiculous. It's just, I think the NBA has handled it fine, after it happens.
Yeah. I mean, Fred mentioned like maybe moving, you know, the idea of like moving fans away from the court side. They're already farther away than they've ever been because, you know, obviously this COVID situation where like, you know, think about how much more space there is now around the players in the bench area. It's almost like hard to fathom. Remember when like there would be like courtside fans between the coaches and the scoring table, or you'd be like taking it out, although you're seeing it somewhat still in some of these arenas, like, you know, you're taking it out of bounds on the other side and Trae Young is close enough where somebody could spit on him, which is disgusting. But I mean, Fred's correct. Like, this is a human issue, and that could go in a lot of different directions as we talk about kind of state of the country. People need to solve it. The NBA can't really solve this. I mean, we have to get to a place where it's okay to congregate publicly without people having to worry about some of these situations. And that's on us collectively to fix, not necessarily the NBA to fix, I think.
I mean, could you put up netting or glass? Is that a ridiculous solution, like in a hockey game or something?
If it gets to that, I mean, it's just sad.
It's a ridiculous,
that would be such
a
depressing suggestion. That would be so depressing if you had to do that. I mean, that would be so depressing.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Just like what a great end to this podcast,
right?
Let's end on a
better note here. The Bucks, who have been incredible, who have kind of overcome what seemed like, I mean, people wouldn't even consider at times like Giannis for MVP. Like, no, we need to see him proven in the playoffs. But he's proved it so far through one round. And right now, BetMGM gives the Bucks the third best title odds behind the Nets, who are first, and then the Lakers, who are second. And with the Anthony Davis injury, who knows? Like, they could be second in title odd favorites, you know, here very soon. But do we think that's right? Could you see a world where Giannis is holding up the trophy in July?
Yeah, I could see it. I feel like Slater and I all season on this podcast have been kind of the devil and the angel on the Bucks' shoulder. I think I'm misusing devil and angel on the shoulder. I think he's just been more critical than I have. But
hater and advocate?
I don't know. But I think it's right just because the Bucks have... I mean, look, the Lakers are always going to be high up in betting because Lakers fans bet a lot and move the lines. And I think the Bucks have a tougher path. So, you know, you look at... I mean, I could see justifying having the Sixers with higher title odds than the Bucks, just because the Sixers get a second round opponent of probably Atlanta, which I think they're going to beat, and I think they could beat pretty handily. And the Bucks, meanwhile, have to go through the Nets and then probably the Sixers. So even if they beat the Nets, I mean, just the chance that they could realistically lose to the Nets, they could realistically lose to Philly, even if they're the favorites in that series. And so I think it's just, it's a tougher path for them. So they did everything they needed to do in that Miami series. They were awesome. But look, they don't have an easy path. I think, you know, having the best record in the league is important for a reason. And Philly just has an easier path than them.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the point I would have made, which is just, you know, Brooklyn and Milwaukee's odds are misvalued, I think, just because they have to face each other and then Philly. But to answer your wider question, Andrew, yeah, sure. I mean, even the number one hater of Milwaukee on this podcast apparently could see them winning it because they look like they looked like the best team in basketball in the first round. Miami wasn't Boston. You know, they're playing Brooklyn in the second round. To me, Miami's a tougher opponent than Boston was for Brooklyn, and they just disposed of Miami very easily, swept them, and did that against, like, their demons, right? I mean, that was the bubble demons they were staring at, and for them to slay it like that, like, it has to kind of make you, you know, pay a bit more attention to them. Jrue Holiday has been every bit what they hoped he would be. And that just, you know, the Jrue Holiday getting the Eric Bledsoe minutes just raises their ceiling so much higher. I could see them getting out of the East. They're probably, you know, from here on, they're going to go, let's say, what, Brooklyn, Philly, Lakers, Brooklyn, Philly, Clippers. You know, that's winning those three straight series is rough, though.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, I think Jrue Holiday is certainly just an outrageous addition to them. He's been very, very good. But having guys come off, like Bobby Portis has been good for them off the bench. He's hitting threes. He brings a tenacity to them. Brent Forbes has been hitting his threes. He's been very, very good for them. And then PJ Tucker, I think you can't underrate what PJ Tucker has been able to do for them and what he will be able to do for them against the Nets. You know, they're going to need all of their top guys. And I think PJ Tucker is a guy that brings a ton of grit and experience. And I can't wait for that series. That may be the best series that we get this playoffs.
They are really well matched to defend the Nets. They can go so many different directions. I mean, you know, I mentioned Lopez earlier playing the five, but like you said, Andrew, they've been switching a lot more this year, and you can play Tucker at the five and you can go with a lot of switches. And honestly, those lineups are going to be really reminiscent of those Houston Golden State series defensively, where Houston was switching everything against Golden State. And, you know, it was incredible to watch offense that amazing versus defense that amazing. And that is an unbelievable second round matchup. That is going to be high level, incredible basketball.
You know, and Budenholzer's just coaching, I think, with a bit more urgency too. And maybe that's just for job security reasons. But, you know, he put in game one, which was the close game of that Miami series. And I know it went OT, but he played Giannis 45 minutes. So at least 40 in regulation. Yep. He wasn't doing that in the playoffs. That was one of the big things Milwaukee fans had an issue with. Like, why is Giannis playing this like regular season, like 34, 35 minute total, when in the bubble, it felt like Giannis's future was on the line and he was still doing that. So just those small marginal gains takes them to a different level.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Sam will be back next week, which will be great. Thanks so much for listening, Fred, Slater. Appreciate you guys, and we will talk to you guys again next week.